This is Remarkable. Welcome to Remarkable, a marketing podcast for podcasters who aren't marketers. I'm your host and teacher, Dave Mooring, and I want to know what it takes to stand out, get noticed, and build a committed audience of listeners and fans. I'm on a quest to find out what makes a podcast remarkable, and I invite you to join me each week as I interview other podcasters, experts, and marketers. The Remarkable Podcast is part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. If you'd like additional marketing resources, early access to my free podcast marketing course, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. This is episode number 15. In this episode of Remarkable, I have a conversation with a podcaster and blogger who left his full-time job at a large corporation to focus on his side hustle in 2008, and he hasn't looked back since. He's built websites, written books, traveled the world, coached entrepreneurs, and interviewed over 175 entrepreneurs and creatives for his podcast. His goal is to help others build something they care about while generating income outside of the 9-to-5 so they can move closer to financial freedom and security. We cover a lot of ground in this interview, and my guests share some detailed and actionable tips on promoting your podcast, building your audience, and engaging with listeners. He shares a surefire way to turn listeners into email subscribers, how to use giveaways to increase engagement, and the number one social media platform that's generating thousands of website hits each month. We also discuss some common beliefs about podcasting that are usually wrong, the one thing your podcast must do if you want to succeed, and a great way to earn money from your podcast when you don't have a sponsor. My guest has been to 24 countries on 6 continents, developed 8 income streams while working from home, and amassed a large, dedicated following of entrepreneurs. He's the founder of SideHustleNation.com and the host of The Side Hustle Show. Here's Nick Loper. Nick, welcome to the Remarkable Podcast.
Dave, what's up? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, thank you for your time today. I'm looking forward to talking to you. And just to give our listeners a little bit of a background story here, I think I first connected with you, I heard you talk at the Podcast Movement Conference in 2015 in Fort Worth, where you did a TEDx-style talk. And you offered a lot of good tips. And so I downloaded your podcast and listened a little bit. And then we reconnected at FinCon, or just outside of FinCon, at a meetup last fall, I think. So I've been looking forward to speaking to you. So thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. It looks like you got some fun stuff going on over here at Super Simple.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. Let me start by asking you to give us a little bit of information about your podcast. So tell us, what is your show and maybe what you're doing over there?
The Side Hustle Show is about 3 years deep, and it's really aimed at part-time and aspiring entrepreneurs on, you know, different business ideas, how to make money outside of your day job, and focusing on the tactics from people who've been there, done that. Like, okay, how did you get this done? And it's selfish in a way, because I try and pull out, well, maybe I want to try that. Maybe I can figure out what these people are doing. And selfless in a way, in that even if I have no desire to run whatever business that this person is running, like, okay, there's still something that we can learn from this and we can take away from this. And it's been an absolute blast to run the show. It's turned into from one of these, you know, kind of after, not really an afterthought, but one of these experiments, I didn't really know where it was going to go, to it's really turned into kind of the highlight of my week. And it's taken on a life all of its own.
So it's the Side Hustle Show, and you also have SideHustleNation.com. Is that right?
Yeah, so I started out, I kind of considered myself a writer. Like, I've been blogging on like a personal blog for, you know, 4 years up to that point when I started the Side Hustle Nation project. And just earlier this year, I ran a survey to my members, and, you know, it was like the Side Hustle Nation blog. You know, I read it all the time. I read it every now and again. And dude, you have a blog. And dude, you have a blog, like, got an embarrassingly high number of responses. And these are like people who, like, I like email every week, like with a blog post. And it was kind of eye opening to me. It was like that the show was really the number one avenue of discovery, avenue of growth. And the writing, which takes like a man, I'm investing a ton of time into, you know, creating these killer posts.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not quite getting the same reach as the audio medium. I think that's one of the powerful takeaways of iTunes. It was like you're swimming in a smaller ocean versus like a blog. I'm going out against the entire internet, like all of Google for discoverability versus. In iTunes and some of these other podcast directories, podcast marketplaces, like it's a smaller pool to swim in. And I think John Lee Dumas said this at one of the talks I heard him. It's like, if you Google like entrepreneur or entrepreneurship, I'm on page 17, right? But if you search that same keyword in iTunes, I'm like number two. And it's just a completely different ballgame. And on top of that, I think it's a much more valuable listener experience or user experience, right? Like somebody can spend 5 minutes reading your blog post, take it or leave it. But if they're going to spend, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes with you in their earbuds, like that's a deeper relationship. I think that's pretty cool.
Which came first, the website and blogging or the podcast?
So they started around the same time under the Side Hustle Nation brand, but I had, like I said, I've been writing since like 2009 and just on a personal blog, personal domain, about okay. A bunch of random stuff. Like sometimes it was marketing and entrepreneurship stuff because that's what was like going on. I was like building my side hustle during those years. But like there was no coherent message or reason for anyone to like stick around and subscribe because it was like, you know, there was some business stuff, but there was also like personal, you know, here's our pictures from our vacation right. And here's like some update from our dog. Like here's some rant about current events. Like there was no overarching theme.
It was a typical blog for that period of time, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And despite everyone's advice, hey, niche down, focus, like, you know, what's the, you know, who are you actually talking to? And, you know, once crazy as it is, like once I started to do that, the readership started to grow and the numbers started to grow. So there's maybe something to that.
So you actually heard that advice and then you had an intention to niche down with your blogging and show. Is that?
Yeah. I heard that advice for years and ignored it. So I was like, yeah, that's not what I want to do. Yeah. When the, you know, what's the saying? When the student is ready, the teacher will appear or whatever. Yeah. So I was like, I probably wasn't ready to make that transition at that time.
Sure. But
I think still the practice of writing daily, weekly, you know, learning how to work WordPress, you know, there were some really valuable skills that were learned kind of during that hobby blog phase, hobby blog time period.
Yeah. Was there I checked out your LinkedIn profile and you went to college and you went to business school. It looks like, or you studied business. And then I assume you came out and had some sort of a corporate job. Was there a moment or when did you realize that you wanted to do a side hustle for yourself and how to make that transition?
Probably before even graduating or starting corporate. Like in my first couple of years of college, I did this internship where they, like, it was like a painting, house painting company. So they assign you a territory, they assign you a zip code basically, and they say, hey, it's your job to go out and paint as many houses as you can over the course of the summer. And they, you know, teach you how to estimate a job, and they, you know, show you how to hire people, and they do all the sales training, and they, you know, almost as an afterthought, they show you how to paint. And so it's kind of like everything that can go wrong will go wrong. Like a bunch of 19-year-olds with paint sprayers, they go, this is a great idea.
Wow.
And so that was really, really, it was really stressful. You know, worked harder than I ever had in my life. But it was also really rewarding to, you know, at the end of the week, you know, to sit back on the curb and say, hey, look at what we did, you know, the before and after. And then at the end of the summer to look back and say, hey, we did, you know, 30 something jobs and we did 70 grand worth of revenue as a 19-year-old. Like that was pretty cool. And it kind of gave me my first taste of, you know, working for profits and not wages. And I had the bad habit of like really underbidding jobs because I was afraid of getting work. But it was like that, you know, then trying to, you know, mind your margins. Like it was a really, really kind of priceless business education at that age, and it gave me something to apply. Like in school, it was very like theory, like here's marketing 101 and stuff. Mm-hmm. But like having an actual business and stuff to apply it to really, really helped in the classroom.
So you kind of kept that in the back of your mind, even when you took a job. So I guess the whole time you were working, you were trying to find a way to be your own boss.
Trying to figure out, like, how am I going to get out of here? Like, I never, I don't know. Like, I was just going down this path with one foot, and with the other foot, you know, always kind of knew in the back of my mind, like, I wasn't going to be there for life, or at least I hoped I wasn't going to be there for life. So trying to figure out how, you know, how to build my own corporate ladder, since I definitely didn't see myself climbing the one that I was on. What the original side hustle was the footwear comparison shopping site. So comparison shopping is not as big as it once was, because nowadays you just go to Amazon and search. But in back in the day, it was, you know, very into, like, well, where can I get the best deal? And specifically for footwear, is kind of a high margin product with a lot of retail margin built in, so they pay pretty high commissions. So I started out on Google AdWords, like with direct link text ad with my affiliate tracking link for like specific products. So it'd be like, I'm looking for the New Balance model, and New Balance was great for this because they have like numbered model names. I'm looking for the New Balance, you know, 876, you know, whatever. And you could direct link to that page, whoever had the best deal. And so I started out with just like a budget of $1 a day because I was still in school and wanted to see if this would work. And once kind of had some validation there, and then graduation, and then trying to figure out how can I scale this? And the answer that I came up with was, well, you know, to build an actual website. And so that was kind of a scary investment to make at the time, but had that initial validation that it might work. And so several months later of outsourced development work and several thousand dollars in contract cost, the website was up and it did work.
So is that what allowed you to leave your corporate job, that shoe site?
It was kind of a long road, probably. It was 3 years of nights and weekends on the side trying to build this thing up. And I probably stuck around longer than I needed to, just kind of being more risk averse and not wanting to take that leap into the unknown. But that was the vehicle. That was the side hustle that ultimately let me quit my job.
And so you did that for a while, right? The shoe site?
Yeah. So that actually ran kind of, you know, in that infant stage from like 2004 all the way up to summer of 2014. So had a pretty good run as far as businesses go. But of course, I was like the naive person that said, oh, well, this could be like my thing. Like I could do this forever. And throughout its life, it had a number of, you know, kind of ups and downs and roller coaster. On my first day of self-employment, like Google completely shut down my advertising account. And I was like, are you kidding me? I just turned in the keys to my company car.
Oh man.
You know, this was like, you know, summer of 2008, like the economy is just going to complete hell. And I'm like, what did I do? This is horrible. And like, I mean, you met me, like, I don't have any hair. Like, I used to have hair at that point. Like, it was a really, really stressful summer trying to get back in their good graces or make all these changes to the website. And ultimately they come back like 3 months later and like another 15 grand worth of development investment. Oh, wow. They're like, yeah, looks like we made an error. You're good to go.
Oh my God.
Like, oh my God, are you kidding me? And so it went on, you know, for several more years after that, but some scary stuff. So I was like, one of the themes on Side Hustle Nation is like, hey, look, if you're relying on one source of income for your livelihood, for most people, that's their day job. That's an inherently risky position to be in. But I found on my first day as an entrepreneur, I was in the exact same position and even worse, relying on one source of income, which overwhelmingly relied on one source of traffic. So it was kind of 80% of that traffic and revenue was gone in an instant because I didn't really have that much control over it. They could, you know, shut me down at any time in a, kind of an arbitrary way.
What did you learn about any lessons from as far as marketing for that, the shoe store site or the shoe comparison site?
Diversify.
Yeah. So did you go out to put ads in other places or what did you do to drive traffic to that site?
Yeah, that site really never got a lot of organic love, but it was So we went on Bing, we went on Yahoo, trying to get some of these other sources and really, really trying to dial in the Google stuff while the getting was good to make sure, like, okay, this is a high quality page, this is a great user experience. And it was always this fine line because they really didn't like people doing paid ads to affiliate landing pages, because your sole source of your reason to exist is to drive traffic to other pages, and we don't like that. And it's like, come on, Google, like, take a look in the mirror. The sole purpose of your search engine is to drive traffic to other pages. Like, right. Plus, on the other, they went out and bought some, you know, comparison shopping technology for $42 million. Like, you know, there's value in this. You know, your users like this. You're just trying to cut out the, you want to be the middleman, not me. So there's some drama there. So a love-hate relationship with Google, of course.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
But yeah, that was kind of the, and it took several years to build up some other income streams, but that really was kind of a scary time to say, well, maybe we ought to try and diversify a little bit, you know, focus on one thing at a time. But once that is up and spinning, okay, maybe that's, now it's time to try another project and see if we can kind of spread the risk around a little bit.
So is that what enabled you to move to the Side Hustle Nation full time?
It's been a great excuse to kind of publicize some of the other experiments, right? So there's like a Kindle publishing business. There's like online course business. There's a freelancing business. There's experiments with Fiverr, like all sorts of random different things, like peer-to-peer lending. And all of this stuff kind of falls under that Side Hustle umbrella that now, thankfully, for several years, haven't had to go dust off the old resume and get a real job, and still do, even though the shoe site is dead, still do some affiliate marketing on a handful of other sites as well.
What's worked best for you as far as the different side hustles that you're working on? Where do you primarily get, I guess, your revenue to keep doing what you're doing?
The projects that have worked out best for me are the ones that I can put my personal brand or personal stamp on. So I've probably had more failures than successes. And the ones that don't take off are the ones that are kind of purely money grabs, if that makes sense. Or, oh, I think there might be an opportunity here. Let me try. And so we live in kind of like wine country in California. And I was like, I should start a wine site. And I was like, I have no business writing a wine. I don't know anything about wine other than, you know, I occasionally like to drink it. And so all of the content was just kind of like me too, our articles, and, you know, repurposing what other people had written. It was like, this is crap. Like, there's no reason for people to visit this site, and no one did. And it's like, why was I surprised at that? I tried to build after the shoe site had some success, all of the advertisers were like, hey, you know, we also sell handbags. Why don't you go into that? I was like, okay, well, that seems logical. And, you know, so I tried to build that. And I was like, another $5,000 development investment. And it just, you know, the margins were lower in a lot of ways. And there were, you know, a ton more advertisers. Just a really, like, had I done more homework in advance and, you know, really tried to learn about that market a little more, you know, could have saved that project. But the project, like the book projects, like where I've really been able to, you know, put my own stamp on it. Like, I tried to outsource a book, which was a horrible idea.
I've thought about it. It's good to know that's a bad idea. I thought about it.
So I was like, hey, look, I have this whole like super detailed outline. I wrote like a 1200 word outline. I was like, look, just expand on these points. Come on. You said you're a native English speaker. You're clearly not. When I got the work back, it was just bad news. And it's like totally my bad. Like, I should have asked for like a 1,000 word sample instead of just paying upfront for like a 1200 or 12,000 word book or 15,000 word book. So I, you know, scrap the whole thing, rewrite it. It's just, I don't know.
I get it.
Some mistakes, but I'm learning from them. And, you know, if you actually care about it, like, and really put yourself into it, that's where I've seen sort of seen the projects take off.
So how would you bring that into podcasting if you were, you know, talking to somebody that's either a fairly new podcaster or somebody that hasn't started their show and they're trying to figure out what their topic should be about and whether they should niche down more or focus. What have you learned that you might be able to share with somebody like that?
Well, the great thing about running an interview show is that you don't have to do much talking. You can let the guests do the talking. So that was good. That was good for me, especially at the start. Trying to figure out what's your unique angle. And you could even say like, hey, you know, with the side hustle, so just, does the world need another entrepreneurial interview show? You know, probably not. But what's your unique angle? What's it going to be? And say, okay, well, we're going to focus on, you know, really diving into the tactics and specifically for people trying to do this part-time. And I don't know, maybe that's even still too broad. So trying to figure out, and you see this, like people launching, you know, whatever it is on fire. And then they're like, oh, now we're going to go to the lightning round. It's like, just stop. Like, right. You know, try and do something a little bit different. But I'm very high on podcasting. I think it's a great method for discoverability, and the you know, whole new and noteworthy thing kind of gives you a leg up. Like, can you imagine if Google had new and noteworthy, right? Like, hey, yeah. here's a brand new site we're going to put on the front of our homepage.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. So it's a really cool opportunity. I don't know how long it's going to last, but so I think that's really cool for discoverability. The thing with the show and with audio is, you know, so several years ago, people were like, video is the future. You got to do video. YouTube is going to be awesome. It's like, I really don't want to do video. Like, that sounds horrible to me.
Yeah.
And so a couple of years ago, people were saying the same thing about podcast. It's the year of the podcast. You got to do audio. iTunes is the future. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to miss the boat again. And even though, like, the first few episodes, like, it took a ton of, like, I ordered the mic and I, you know, studied all this stuff, and it was still like a month or something before I got up the nerve to be like, would you be a guest on my show? Like, I'm thinking about doing this show. And like, the first few episodes are horrible, and like, you gotta get used to hearing your own recorded voice, which is super weird, and you kind of commit to doing this, but it's, I don't know, like, it kind of takes, like I said, it takes on a life of its own, and it's an absolute blast. So if you can find yourself starting it as an experiment and seeing what happened. Like I said, I didn't realize you had to have your own media host. I was like, oh, just, you know, you send it to iTunes and they host it, right? It's like, oh no, it's just all of these podcast hosts are just like feed readers. Okay. And the hosting was $15 a month. Had it been 20 or 25 or 30, like, the show might never have existed, because I was like, what am I signing myself? Did I just commit myself to $30 a month for the rest of my life? Like, that sounds crazy. I was like, okay, 15, all right, I'll swing it. I can see what happens. And, you know, you just kind of commit to that consistency of putting it out, and it goes and it goes and it goes.
So a minute ago, you mentioned that your audience is more familiar with your podcast than your blog posts and things like that. How have you gone about building your audience? Have you done anything intentionally, or have you just produced a show regularly for enough time that it's grown?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you what the secret sauce was. I think the consistency definitely plays a role. I think so. Earlier this year, I read The Slight Edge, or late last year, I read The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson, and I really liked that book. As he says, hey, the slight edge habit is something you do every day, or week in and week out. And at the beginning, you can't really see any results from it. And he gave the example like going to the gym, right? Like, you go to the gym today, you don't go to the gym today. You're not going to get a six pack, and you're probably not going to die of a heart attack. Like, you can take it or leave it. But like, if you consistently, you know, develop this habit, you're going to start to see some results from that. And I've really, you know, looking back, said, okay, the consistency of publishing this and having a consistent format and consistently great guests, you know, week in and week out, like, that has a compound effect, like, over time. And, you know, if you zoom out on the chart, like, it starts to look like a, you know, like a stock chart. Like, there's ups and downs, but like, the general trend is, you know, up and to the right. What took me a long time to figure out with the show was, like, I started without really a picture in mind, other than like, I want to have a podcast, because that's what people say I should do.
Yeah, right.
It took a long time to figure out that the show is unlikely to be a business all on its own unless it's just gigantic. And so you look at Entrepreneur on Fire and you see, oh, we're making 50 grand a month in sponsorship money. And that would be outstanding. I would take 50 grand a month to host right. a show. But it's amplitude and frequency, right? He's putting out a show 30 days a month and has a massive audience, right? So he can sell, you know, several ad spots per day and put that out every single day. And so if you're doing a weekly show, the numbers probably don't look like that. And so that was kind of depressing to realize, but it was like, okay, how can, you know, I still think this is a worthwhile endeavor. So how can I make this work for my business? It's like, okay, this is just, it's like writing a blog. You know, it's not a business all on its own unless you're having, you know, massive, massive traffic and you got a bunch of ads. So it has to be content marketing for something else, like for the business behind the business. And I am still working on, you know, what that business exactly is. But I figured, you know, if whatever it's going to be, you're going to have emails. And so trying to figure out how to turn listeners into subscribers was a huge turning point for me. And what that looked like in practice, and I hope you're doing this for your show, was creating like episode specific or content specific opt-in offers or content upgrades. So I would put together, we just did this whole episode on how to sell and market courses on Udemy and develop passive income from these video courses that you record. And it was like step one, step two, step three, like really juicy tactical stuff on how to get this done. And so instead of my, you know, usual generic call to action, like, hey, join the Side Hustle Nation Facebook group or like what, you know, something totally random or leave me a review on iTunes. It was like, no, if you want, you know, to download all of Scott's top Udemy tips, you know, go to this URL and I'll send you a free PDF. Those convert like crazy. And, you know, I've been doing this now for the past over 100 episodes and it's just exploded the email list growth. So I've gone from, you know, around 1,000 subscribers at that time, which was like summer of 2014 to 26,000, you know, fast forward a year and a half, 2 years later.
Wow.
So it's just been, it took a long time to figure out. But I finally, you know, hit on something that works. And, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Keep that wheel spinning, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So the nuts and bolts of that are, so every episode you create a PDF and you let your audience know in that episode where they can go to get the PDF of those highlights and tips.
Yeah. And so I'm using Lead Pages to get this done for file delivery. And they can, you can actually use them. Like they have a text in option. So you could say, hey, you know, text Udemy to, you know, whatever their text in number is. And so that's a cool way to do it. Or you can just use kind of like your landing page, drive traffic back to your site. It's been really, really effective for me. And so I've seen people do this with transcripts, so I'm going to use like a highlight reel document. I've seen people do extended MP3 interviews, like Grant Baldwin did this for the How Did You Get Into That show. It's like, man, if I'm 30 minutes deep and I'm really digging this interview, hey, if you want the extended audio, you know, give me your email. Like, well, yeah, I want to know what you guys talked about after you hung up. Like, that sounds kind of cool. You know, other like cheat sheets, action guides, checklists, all that stuff like works really, really well. And it's just kind of, because that's my beef with podcasting is you don't know who's out there. It's a very anonymous medium. You don't have really good analytics and you have no way to communicate with people outside of the show. So here's a way to kind of get another touch point with your audience.
Do you get more people to sign up through the text system or by going somewhere to put in their email address?
By far, the email address one, and I have run very limited tests on the texting system, to be honest. I've heard it on other shows. I've done it only once or twice.
Sure. And so, I don't know what you're comfortable sharing, but so for any given episode, about how many downloads do you estimate that you're getting, and then about how, you know, what you're convert, about how many people sign up for your emails through that download?
So it really, really, really varies. The top performing episodes have had, you know, thousands of opt-ins.
Wow.
Typically, okay, new shows will get 10 to 12,000 listeners at this point, and we'll see anywhere from, you know, 100 to 500 opt-ins for those content upgrades.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, that's a lot. So you've gotten up to about 26,000. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Wow, fantastic.
Yeah, and the vast majority of those are not from like the site-wide lead magnet, which is something like, here's the five fastest ways to make money outside of your day job. Like the vast majority of subscribers have come in through one of those back doors, one of those other secret, you know, content upgrades from the show.
Wow. No, that's a great tip. Any other tips like that about engaging or connecting with your audience?
So every now and again, try and, you know, do some sort of contest or call to action to drive people back to the site. So we had recently Stephen Key on talking about product licensing, which was kind of a really fascinating conversation because it was like, you know, if you can, he's like, play the what if game. What if this was made out of a different material, like looking at physical products? What if this, you know, had this extra feature? And then like calling or sending a note to big, big companies and saying, hey, I'm a product developer. How would you like to license this idea from me? I was like, crazy stuff. And so it was like, hey, what was your biggest takeaway from this conversation with Steven? Leave a comment at the show notes and have a chance to win a copy of Steven's book. It's all about product licensing. And so that, you know, episode had 25 or 30 comments on it. So doing contests like that seems to work pretty well. What other good ways to engage listeners? I don't know. Yeah, just asking for feedback basically every now and again.
Sure. Are you doing anything to promote your podcast outside of iTunes? Do you utilize social media or search engine optimization or Facebook, Twitter, anything like that?
So a couple of things on that front. One thing that I've done is syndicate all the episodes to YouTube. And this is the most rudimentary way possible. It's just kind of a placeholder image and then roll the tape. Like it's the worst video in the world. It's just like a static image and then, you know, the audio of the podcast. But some of these, like the most popular one has over like 40,000 views on YouTube. And most of them have, you know, 1 to 200, but like for some reason it's a completely new search engine, another avenue for discoverability. And so those people are listening to that episode. They're hearing your plug for your website, your content upgrades. And it's just another avenue. I use a service called tunes2tube.com, which is I think free, or like they have a $10, you know, donation or something. If it's over 50 megabyte, your file. And it's just, it takes almost no time to do, but it's like, well, that's 40,000 people that I, you know, never would have reached otherwise. So some pretty cool stuff there. And the other thing that's been working really well lately is creating Pinterest images. Like I'm totally new to Pinterest, but this has actually been sure. blowing up for me. Creating nice looking like vertical pin images for your episode. Like, you know, how this guy made $30,000 last year at the flea market, or, you know, something totally random. And then finding different there's a lot of like work from home groups, you know, in my niche, a lot of like work from home groups, a lot of like frugal living or, you know, entrepreneurship groups, and, you know, requesting to join them. It's kind of a closed system where you have to like ask for an invite, but it's not super hard to do. And then you have permission to pin this stuff to these group boards that may have, you know, even if you have no followers on Pinterest, or like I started when I had like less than 100 followers, but these group boards might have thousands and thousands of followers. It's a way to get your content in front of this bigger audience. The expert, or my go-to expert on this, was Rosemarie Groner. I met her at FinCon actually, from busybudgeter.com. And so we did an episode on the Side Hustle Show where she like breaks this down like step by step by step. You know, so last month had like 20 something thousand visits from Pinterest and like 500 email opt-ins from Pinterest. It was, you know, it's just been a really cool kind of incremental traffic channel for me.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I use Pinterest and I post stuff, but I've not really joined any groups like that. I'm a part of some Facebook groups. The issue that I think a lot of people run into with Facebook groups is a lot of the group moderators don't want you promoting or posting your own content. So is that a little bit different on Pinterest where, you know, it's not frowned upon for you to post every podcast episode with an image to that group?
Yeah, that's kind of the weird distinction between Pinterest. And Rosemarie kind of pointed out, like, Facebook is, you know, I'm there to see my friends or interact with my friends. But Pinterest is kind of a content search engine. So people are on there, like, actively looking for stuff. So they kind of welcome it and they encourage it.
I knew that Pinterest was, people are using it with more of an intent to buy. So, I mean, even example is my wife, when she gets ready for birthday parties, she starts a board for the birthday party for the theme and the cupcakes and the things that she wants to buy for that. So I knew it was an intent to buy. I just haven't seen anybody doing it with a podcast. So that I'm going to have to go back and listen to that episode, and I'll I'll add a link to it in the notes.
One of the first like comments on one of the first pins I posted was like, this is BS. It's not a post. It's all audio or something. It was like, all right, well, but that's like only happened once out of, thousands of pins. So it's not too bad.
And so you're posting it with a link back to the episode page on your website.
Yeah. So it goes to the show notes page. So people can either listen on the page or they can download the highlight reel, which is a content upgrade, or they can, then there's a link to iTunes and Stitcher from there as well.
Any other social media activity that you do other than Pinterest that's working?
That's been the kind of most effective source of traffic for me in terms of like audience engagement. The Facebook group has been really, really helpful, kind of almost in a surprising way. Like I was really hesitant to start a Facebook group because, hey, there's already, a handful of other side hustle or entrepreneurship Facebook groups out there. I don't want to add more workload in moderating this thing. It's actually been really, really cool. Like people are chiming in with their own questions and answers and forming a community and connections within that group, like without any of my involvement. And I have to delete maybe, one post a week. It's like the spam problem has not really been an issue too much.
Yeah.
And, now people are posting pictures. They're like, oh, I met Dave in Portland. I was driving through and I had beer with this guy. I was like, dude, that's awesome.
Yeah,
like,
that's really great. Cool.
So that's kind of a fun way to do where it's a community. And I always say that, like, hey, this is the community for part-time entrepreneurs. Like that was the language that I said, but that was not the action that I took for the first year and a half. And so, actually setting up the community or a place for people to interact and talk to each other, I think has been a ton of fun.
What is there anything that you think is common advice that kind of goes around as far as promoting a podcast or building an audience that you think is wrong?
Well, the common advice is, interview famous people and they're going to share it with their audience and that's how you're going to grow. But it's like, the people who, first of all, it's not their job to share, the episode, the interview that they did with you. Somebody, Paul Blaise from, what's his show? It's Doubt the Doubts or something.
Oh, I don't know that.
Really good guy. And he had this whole presentation on like, Chris Brogan sucks at marketing. My podcast. Because it's like, hey, that's not, his job. Plus his audience already knows his story. That's not what they're, they don't care that much. So I think that's kind of advice that may not be the most relevant anymore.
So don't go looking for guests who you think are going to be, be the best at sharing or getting you more exposure.
Yeah. I don't know I don't know how effective that is.
Sure.
It's like, and when I'm on shows, I'll share it, I'll tweet it out and stuff, but it's like, I don't know. It's like people kind of already know this stuff or, you assume that your audience already knows this story, but I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people have some hesitation about self-promoting anyway. So
yeah,
go listen to me talk on this other podcast.
Yeah, it's one of those things. So I was kind of, in that boat, like, oh, I should, go after these, big name guests. But some of the top performing shows are people that I've never heard of, that nobody's ever heard of. And that's what makes it awesome. It's like, sometimes the best, the best advice comes from the unlikely source, because like, they're neck deep in it. Like, and it's more relatable. Like, hey, this is a side hustle. They're making it happen. Like, just like me. And sometimes those are more fun. I love being the person to like scoop a new guest before they kind of like have made the rounds on a bunch of different shows.
How are you going about finding those people and getting them on your show?
So it started with a personal network and then kind of word of mouth. Like who else should I talk to? Who else do you know that would be a good fit for that? Now, a lot of pitches come in my way, and I'm sure you get them too. Like the great pitches are easy because you're like, yes, let's make it happen. The horrible pitches are great because they're easy and like, no way. And the medium where it becomes time consuming is like the medium where you're like, there might be something here. There might be something we can work with. Like, how can we, you know, create a story arc or an outline for this. So that's kind of where the time consuming stuff comes in. But a lot of times people will send recommendations. And now it's like, okay, you know, what other, you know, can I hear you on another show? Can I check you out? Or, you know, what are your proposed, you can look through the archives and kind of see what the angle is. Like you have an understanding of the audience. You say, what takeaways do we want people to get out of this? Here's specifically what I can share. And, you know, it's like, oh, you know, I'm excited. Somebody sent me like, hey, I'm up to like $50,000 a month, like in using email marketing. I want to share some email marketing tactics. Like, yeah, let's do it. Like if you have a compelling hook, like a compelling story, you know, let's make it happen.
Are you pretty protective of your brand? Have you recorded a show that you haven't released or had to go through that issue?
There's probably been 3 or 4 that I've recorded and had to have the awkward conversation of like, yeah, this just didn't go the direction I wanted to go, or like this just didn't have what I was looking for. And it sucks because it's like, okay, this person invested some time in this conversation. So I'll try and throw them a bone, like a link or a mention in something else that I do. But I think it's more important to suck it up and make it awkward for you and one other person than for like, you know, your entire audience, you know. Yeah. You don't want them to suffer through that. And that's, it happens. It happens.
So do you produce one show a week? Is that right?
Yes.
Do you have, I know you have some experience, with virtual assistants and things like that. Are you utilizing a small team or outsourcing some of the work to help you get your podcast done every week?
Yeah. So earlier this year with our baby on the way, I was like, man, I'm spending way too much time editing. I've been trying to up my editing game after talking to Srini Rao at Podcast Movement, who was very heavily skewed toward like the NPR style, like the storytelling style, the narrative podcast. It's like, this is a very highly produced show. It's a really great listener experience. This is the competition. Like this is what is in your listeners' earbuds when they're not listening to your show. And so it's like, you know, I got to step up my game, you know, so trying to be, you know, edit the shows a little bit tighter. And, you know, I was just spending a lot of time doing that. So I actually hired an editing service earlier this year. It's Kerry Green's podcast, Fast Track. And so it was a really tough thing to let go. Cause it was like, this is my baby. This is my art. Like this is my, you know, weekly creative practice. And so it's taken some back and forth to kind of dial that in and get it right. But, that saves some time. And actually, you know, with the content upgrades, I, you know, wrote those all myself for the first year, probably. Then I had an assistant that's been helping me out. And actually I now have a new writer that's been helping me out for this year on creating those each week.
Yeah. So 2 questions about that. One, for the writer, they listen to the episode and pull out the tidbits and create that document for you.
Yes.
And then as far as the editing, are they, I know a lot of editing services edit out the ums and the ahs and the awkward pauses or coughs and things like that. Are they also editing out maybe questions that don't go over well? Are you giving them that liberty, are you controlling the content, or are they controlling the actual content?
Yes and no. So a lot of times there are, so like this is kind of like the Pandora, like thumbs up, thumbs down, like feedback. So the first few episodes was like, hey, you know, that question kind of landed with a thud. Like that, right. That one would be okay to leave, or like a story that doesn't go anywhere. You know, so trying to leave in like some concrete examples, like the tactical stuff, or like, oh, this tangent wasn't very funny or wasn't very relevant. And, you know, yeah. So like, okay, that's okay to cut. Cause it's like, if we can cut, you know, 35 minute recording, even down to 30, like that might take an hour to listen through and do that. But it's like, okay, you know, was it worth it for 5 minutes? Well, it's like, that's 5 minutes times 1,000 people or times 10,000 people. Like that's a lot of collective time. And I think if you're respectful of people's time in that way and can keep it tight, like they're more likely to listen to the next episode. One show I think is doing a really good job of this is the Tropical MBA podcast. I've been, you know, listening to them for years and years and years, and you can tell like how their editing has improved, where it's just very, very succinct, very tight. And I think they do a really nice job with it. So like, as I've listened to more shows, like my standards have gone up. And so trying to reflect that in the show itself.
Yeah, I'll have to check out the Tropical MBA. I have not listened to that one. And I did an interview with Brian Orr, who's taken over the podcast Movement Sessions, and he's doing a great job scaling those down and doing kind of a narrative similar to like an NPR style show. And after interviewing him, I have the desire to tighten them up more. But it's a little bit of a balance. I'm a big fan of Tim Ferriss and his podcast. And one of the things that he's said repeatedly is that if he had to go through and edit and scale them back and cut them in half, he wouldn't have a podcast, you know, like it's either you're going to get some of the raw or you're not going to get it at all. So it's a really fine balance. I would love to edit more, but on my end with the amount of time, and it's hard to justify that editing.
It is. It's one of those 80-20 where it's like, you know, if this is going to take me an hour or 3 hours, is it worth it? It's really, it can be frustrating at times, yeah. especially when the show is pre-revenue.
Yeah. And so for me, and for anybody, the decision to me is if it's going to keep me from producing the show on a regular, weekly, consistent basis, then I'm probably going to shy away from it right now. And hopefully, you know, in the future, I'll be able to continue to improve. Are you making direct revenue from the show through ads or anything like that?
Finally, yes. Okay. after, you know, I think episode 150 or so, like, had this winter, like kind of like the first official podcast sponsors. So I had, you know, for a couple of years kind of done affiliate offers of different products and services that I liked at the end of the show. But this year started like some official, you know, flat fee sponsorships. You know, I've worked with FreshBooks, worked with Teachable, and working with Design Crowd right now to get that stuff done. So
did you,
production.
I'm sorry. Sorry, go ahead. I was going to ask, did you go after them or did they come to you?
They came to me.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So that was kind of fun. And I was like, I don't know how much to charge. And so I talked to, you know, I wish I had talked to Jason Zook. He's the I Wear Your Shirt guy.
Yeah.
We did
a
whole episode on, you know, how to get sponsors. And he was like, hey, you know, I don't know how much this stuff should cost either. So you aim high and then they say, well, maybe that's too much. And so they, you know, come back. Maybe, even if they cut your answer in half, you're like, well, it's better than it was before. And it's been kind of interesting. So right now I'm charging $400 an episode and my production costs are around $100 an episode. So
that's great.
It's been pretty fun, but it was like, you know, it took 2 years or a little more to get to that point.
Did you have any success with the affiliate marketing or affiliate? Was it, did you do an ad or just tell people to go check out this product or service because you were using it and did that work for you?
Yeah, that's worked reasonably well. It's kind of part of the podcast advertising is repetition, because it's like I'm not always going to be in a place to take action on it. But if I hear it enough times, okay, this is a service that's been recommended to me. And I know podcast advertising works because I check out products and services that I hear on other podcasts.
Sure, so sure.
One of them is like the Ting, you know, wireless service. So I heard that first on Entrepreneur on Fire and I was like, hey, shoot, we cut our cell phone bill in half. Like I'm an advocate. I'm a fan. And so right. I advertise Ting on a handful of shows and so they actually pay in referral credits. So we've gotten, you know, some money off our cell phone bill from those ads. And so I've done, Airbnb, I've done like Website Magazine. I've done kind of a handful of other, you know, referral sponsorship deals, even like Audible a couple times.
And do you make it sound like an ad or are you trying to blur the lines between it sounding like a sponsorship or are you just saying this is something that people should go check out?
Yeah, no, I'll make it sound like a sponsorship. Hey, this episode is brought to you by Ting. Go to, you know, sidehustlenation.com/Ting to get $25 off your first, you know, month of service or whatever.
Is there anything that you think that you've been doing that other people haven't been doing to build your audience or promote your show that you think would be worth mentioning?
I do, you know, have been in the habit of sending a weekly newsletter for new episodes. So every Thursday, I've been sending out kind of a weekly, here's what's going on in Side Hustle Nation land this week, which I don't like if I'm already subscribed to the show on my phone, like I don't know if that's super relevant. If I'm already subscribed to the blog in Feedly, I don't know if that's super relevant, but I always try and include something like from my personal life or observations that week to make it somewhat unique. So trying to create that touch point, even if you don't have the time or capacity to listen, you know, right now or this week, like that's fine. But it's just kind of like to keep in constant contact with the audience. I don't know if that's helped or hurt, because, you know, you do get dozens of unsubscribes every time you send a message.
What are your plans for your podcast going forward?
Just trying to keep it up. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I don't really know if I have any plans to change the format of it or the type of guests that that come on. But just, you know, we're closing in on 200 episodes, and it's just kind of a learning or a practice where it's like I didn't know what I was doing when I started, and I feel like it's still in the very early days of it. And so I'm kind of excited to see where it goes.
Do you have any kind of fear of running out of guests?
I totally did at the beginning. I just committed to myself to like a weekly show. Like, what's going to happen if you run dry? And actually this week didn't have anything in the queue, which is really rare. So I'm trying to batch a whole bunch of recordings this month. And so it was like, okay, perfect timing. Cause I've done a handful of kind of meta roundup shows where it's like, here's at the end of the show, I ask, hey, what's your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation? And then every 50 episodes I can say, hey, you know, here are my top takeaways. Here's what I've applied basically from these number one tips. And so it was good timing for that. So that's what's going on this Thursday. And then we'll have a handful of recordings this week to kind of rebuild the queue. But it's, I don't know. Like I was really worried about that at the start, running out of guests, but you know, now there's more pitches coming in than I can realistically handle. So no problem there. And then you look at, well, John publishes 30 episodes a week and he's not running out of guests. So there's never going to be any shortage of, you know, people doing cool things outside of their job to make money.
Last question about your podcast specifically. How do you keep from following every guest's side hustle? How do you decide what to do and what not to do and keep from being so scattered and trying every idea that comes your way?
That's probably the biggest challenge. Like, I know it's a good episode when I get off the call and being like, dude, I should totally do that. Like, yeah. We had a guy recently who was flipping raw land. And this is just like fascinating to me. It's like, you know, no physical product. Basically, he's like trying to, you know, buy these parcels like very cheap, like targeting out-of-state owners that owe back taxes, and like you got really specific on like how to do this, and then turning around and flipping them like on a owner carry contract. And so it's like, hey, you know, $99 down, $99 a month for the next 6 years. And he's like, hey, if I get 10 of these, that's $1,000 a month. If I get 100 of these, that's $10,000 a month. And, you know, that's, you know, straight passive income until the contract expires. Then I can do it again. And I was like, dude, this sounds super easy. Like, you know, you get all jazzed up and then you're like, okay, focus.
Do you have to run things by your wife to get permission if you're going to do anything else like that?
If it was going to require like a big investment, like I would definitely talk to her about it. So one of the failed side hustle experiments was actually like buying a website. And so it's like, if you have the cash to invest, like one of the fastest ways to generate cash flow is buy an asset that's already making
producing
money.
Cash, right?
Yeah. And so I did that through Empire Flippers, kind of a website sales marketplace, and everything was great for 6 months, and then a Google update, you know, came and wiped the site off the face of the earth. And so I was like, all right, lesson learned. So
we've come full circle back to Google.
I know, they're always out to get you. So there's, you know, there's good things and bad things. And you know, she's always very supportive of these different things. She's actually been on the show as a featured side hustler herself, and with her photography business. It can be very distracting, very tough to say, well, no, I'm not going to do that. But it's trying to figure out how to apply these different tactics and habits to what you are working on. So, you know, I've talked to people about Fiverr and created a new side hustle from that. I've talked to people about Udemy, created a new side hustle from that. I've talked to lots of people about Kindle publishing. And like, I apply all of this stuff to what I am working on without going full bore into it. Like, talk to people about the Amazon FBA business and, you know, e-commerce stuff. And it's like, okay, I can dabble in all of this while still maintaining my sanity and my brand. I'm sure if I focused on one thing, like, you know, could really see some bigger results from it, but you know, that's not my MO right now.
What do you think makes a podcast remarkable? And as you've mentioned, there's a sea of podcasts out there. What do you think makes one stand out?
It's like, what action can I take from listening to this? Like, it's great. And I love listening to, you know, the Serials of the world, but it's entertainment, right? So people are listening. A wise man once told me people use the internet for two things and two things only. You know, number one, to be entertained. Number two, to solve a problem. Mm. If your podcast isn't doing one or both of those things, like, you know, what's its reason to exist? So if, you know, hopefully if you listen to the Side Hustle Show, you have something each week you can like walk away and actually implement or apply versus like, oh, that was nice. I feel inspired today. Or, you know, now right. My mindset is better today. I don't know. Like, I'm not, that sort of thing. So hopefully sure. I've dropped some you know, useful things on content upgrades and Pinterest and other stuff you can apply.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I look forward to creating the notes for this and I will probably do my best to take your advice and create an actionable download from your tips.
Download it. Opt into Dave's thing.
And what is the most remarkable podcast that you listen to? If you can only listen to one
show.
I'll let you one, two, three, you know, what's really your favorite shows?
The two that have been really at the top of my, you know, subscriptions for the last probably 5 years have been the Tropical MBA Show and Smart Passive Income.
Awesome. Well, Nick, do you have anything that you want to share with us or the audience? Anything you've got going on we can check out? I'll definitely send people over to your website and also link to your podcast, which I listen to and I really enjoy. Anything else you want us to know about?
It's all about the podcast. So I'd love to have you tune in over there. Let me know what you think. You can send me an email. It's just nick@sidehustlenation.com. And for a constantly updated laundry list of part-time business ideas that you can start today, hit up sidehustlenation.com/ideas.
Perfect. We'll stop there. Nick, thank you so much for your time. I greatly appreciate it.
You bet, man. This was fun.
Take care.
All right. See you, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Remarkable, part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. As always, I appreciate you taking time to listen, and I hope you took away some helpful tips and actionable insights from Nick. You'll be happy to know that I took Nick's advice and I created a free resource for you that highlights all of the great tips and suggestions, as well as relevant links and the tools mentioned during the conversation. The free resource includes Nick's tips about using affiliate marketing to generate money from your podcast, ideas for what to offer your listeners as a way to drive email subscriptions, links to more info on using Pinterest to boost traffic, and a whole lot more. Download this free resource today by heading over to supersimple.com/Nick. That's SUPERSIMPL.com/NICK. You'll also have access to the full transcript that you can download as well. If you enjoyed this episode or learned something that would help you with your podcast or business, please do me a huge favor and share it with someone that you think would also find it valuable. And last but not least, if you have a question about marketing, a suggestion or feedback, or if you just want to connect, please take a minute to email me. My email address is dave@supersimple.com. This episode of Remarkable is sponsored by Bethesda Roasting Company, a North Carolina-based small-batch gourmet coffee roaster that prides itself on offering only the highest quality single-origin coffee from around the world, perfectly roasted to present the best flavors of each varietal they sell. In addition to using only quality beans, all coffees are roasted within 72 hours of being shipped. And as a self-proclaimed coffee snob myself with over 9 different ways to make coffee at home, I can tell you from experience that if you've never had coffee that's been roasted within just a few days before you brew it, you don't know what you're missing. Fresh coffee is night and day from anything that you can even purchase in a grocery store or a boutique store or even something like a Whole Foods. So head on over to BethesdaCoffee.com, check out their monthly subscription plan so you can get it fresh to your door. Use code SUPERSIMPLE50 at checkout to save 50% on your first purchase of their Explorer or Adventurer subscription. That's BethesdaCoffee.com, and I promise you, you will not be disappointed. Our theme music was composed by Julio Gonzalez at Zymer. Zymer, or Remix spelled backwards, offers sound design and audio post-production for podcasts, video, audiobooks, game, apps, and radio. In addition to my theme music, I've also been using Zymer for some of my post-production work, and I've been extremely pleased with the result. You can learn more about them or contact them today at zymer.co. That's ximer.co. And tell Julio you heard about Zymer on the Remarkable podcast, and you can save 50% on any of their services. And if you would like additional marketing resources, early access to my free podcast marketing course designed to help you grow your audience and reach more listeners, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. That's it. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Remarkable.